And yesterday we started a conversation where I proposed that one of the things that you have to watch for is altered personalities. I said, you know, as I began listening to people talk about themselves and the trouble they get into, I keep hearing people talk about some part of themselves that gets them in trouble over and over again. Usually it's an addicted part or a compulsive part. And they talk about this part of themselves. And I propose the following. What if it's not a part of you, but another you? What if it's a ghost like you that you carry around? Now, if you want to hear more about that, you can go back to the WBAI or archives, and you could listen to yesterday's program, which addressed this in depth. The question is about alter personalities. An alter personality, which is, you know, if you think about it, just the very word alter is a funny word. If you think about altar boys in church, what is that? That's a boy who is a normal kid who dresses up in this saintly costume and adapts an alter pure self. An alter self. The very altar itself, you know, in most places, it's a place where you worship a disembodied entity, which may or may not be there. But when you pray, almost when everyone prays, they move to an alter self. Altercation, interesting word. An altercation is when you're confronting a perceived enemy of some sort. Remember, we got this rule in life, right? If there is an enemy, you have to confront it in some way. Just fooling around with the word alternation. An alternation is when you go somewhere and an alteration is when you go somewhere and you have what is, but you don't like what is, so you change it into something new, something that you imagine. Even the word alternate, which is kind of fascinating, means another self. And in the jury, an alternate is a person who takes the place of another, in case the other is not available. How many alternates do you have? How many alternates do you have? When you're a lover, are you just a lover? You think that's all of you? Do you think that's the real you? When you're angry, is that the real you? Well, this search for the real you has been a question, and we've received a lot of information, a lot of response to yesterday's show. So yesterday I addressed the altered personality. I proposed that the reason we must perceive ourselves as unnatural, we look at ourselves as phonies very often. The reason is because it's true. Most of our time is spent not being our real self. In fact, people spend most of their time, well, people think about their lives, and they think about retirement. You know, they say, oh, one day I'll retire. And what's the image of retirement? When I retire, I will become the real me. I'll stop working. I'll stop wondering. I'll stop worrying. I'll be able to walk around and just be the real me. We look forward to that in retirement. So that means to retire is to finally get to the real self. Now, don't worry. This is not going to be what you think it is. I'm not going to go saying you have to find your real self. I don't know if you want to. Most of the idea behind retirement is that perhaps even that idea about a summer vacation. By now, most of you must be yearning for a vacation somewhere, dying to go to the beach or be somewhere where it's warm. But perhaps even that vacation we take once or twice a year, when we're standing near the ocean or at a mountaintop and we take this deep breath of fresh air and we realize that this is the real me and it hasn't been around very much and it can't be around very much because I have to work and because I have to perform in a certain way. Now, you know, in point of fact, if you think about it, those 2 weeks when you're there, we shouldn't call that vacation. We should call all the time that you spend away from those 2 weeks your vacation, because it's a time when you vacate yourself. Yes, we vacate ourselves. We're performances. We act like performance. We are performance. We live this performing self. Armand DeMille here with you with A Positive Mind. We'll be taking your calls about this today as well. So this would sound like I'm about to tell you that you should find your real self more often, which is what every psychotherapist, spiritual advisor would say to you, especially somebody who wants to sell you something. You know, you should find yourself, but take these vitamins, drink this stuff, and you'll find yourself more. Well, I'm not sure that you should be your real self. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the alternate self is not just good enough. If you think about our parents, some of our parents were really vicious and wrong. Other parents were living their alternate self, and thank God that they screwed this other self on, because they were at least civil. I think people who think of their parents, and they think of their parents in a kind of a fond way, even though they describe dysfunctionalism among their parents, they're saying, you know, he wasn't really there, but he was nice. You know what I mean? I'm not sure if the real self is any better than the alter selves that we live with. Now, the alter selves, as I've said yesterday, are selves that are actually split off from ourselves, just we're aware of them. But you know it when you see it, because when you go to the water cooler at work and you're standing there and someone comes over to you, it's not you standing there anymore. You're not being real. You're gonna position yourself. You're going to joke. You're going to say something that's not coming from a real self, but an alternate self. In my many years that I worked with multiple personality dysfunction, I often found that the real self, the one underneath all the alter personalities, was the most unhappy. They were always depressed. And I'm sure you know what I mean. You could be at home, and you could be miserable. You could be just so unhappy all on your own. But when your friend calls and asks you to go out to a bar or hang out somewhere, you adopt this other personality that laughs and has fun. And just by being around that other person, you feel better. So isn't it possible that we have an alter personality that's like a buddy of ours, the one that laughs, the one that dances? And we happily have this person around. But it doesn't feel like real us when we're out there. You know, most performers don't feel real. I mean, how could they feel real? When we uncover, you know, what's really behind them, when we find out what drives them, when they get unmasked in some way through some of their behaviors, when we see that they're really a different kind of person than this lovely person we see, we're shocked. But why would we be shocked? Because I would imagine that we never see a real person. So how many ways can people hide their real self? I believe that most dysfunction comes from being alienated from the different parts of your self, meaning your alter personalities. I believe we all have them, and I'm looking for you to form a collaboration with them. I'm not trying to get you to give them up. I don't care if you're compulsive. I mean, that's why therapy doesn't work, you know. That's why even medications don't work. That's why people go back to the way they are. That's why we could always say people don't change. It's not that the people don't change. The alter personalities don't change. The alter personalities were built to defend you against some perceived threat. See, that's how it's all born. Remember, in life, two big rules. Eat and don't get eaten. That's every organism on the planet. Those are the two rules. Get something to eat, because you got to stay alive, and don't get eaten. And in every situation we go, it's eat. We're looking for what we could consume, devour, and don't get consumed and don't get devoured. As soon as we perceive threat, we have to defend ourselves in some way. Now, if you're a child and you don't have the luxury of feeling safe, you have to adapt another self that will feel safer. So if you dissociate, that's one way to do it. If you hide, that's another way to do it. Even getting depressed is another way to do it. Or maybe you'll be a jokester or a laugher. Or maybe you'll just be a strong person. You'll be on top of everybody else. But these are all alternate selves born out of fear. Born because somebody said to you, the way you are doesn't work, and nobody wants that around. So I believe that if your frightened self meets your angry self, and they celebrate together, and they recognize each other, and you see them in yourself, and you can say to yourself, well, people say, how do you feel? Did you ever notice if somebody asks you how you feel, how you say, well, I'm not sure? Because who are they asking? There's a whole bunch of you in there that they're asking. They're asking one person who says, I feel angry, and another person who says, I feel sad, and a third person who says, I feel relieved. And so maybe the reason you can't identify a feeling, because it's not just one you answering the question. In the studio with me, Linda Vanella. Hey, Linda.
Hi, Armand. I'm glad to be here with you.
Fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it is, for sure. For sure, it's fascinating stuff. It brings me to a concept of the mirror image as well, too. Can we look at that as the other, the you that becomes someone else when someone else, like your mother or some other role model, sees you as someone pretty or someone bright? Then you feel pretty and you feel bright. You know, I've often spoken to my students about that.
I'm not sure if you do. I'm not sure if you do or if you become pretty and bright so you can get that love from your parent.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you adopt that personality. But here's the trouble with it. Becoming pretty and becoming bright, that's really terrific, and you get loved for it. But you see, you can't feel it. Only your altered personality can feel it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can see a person being adored and feeling adored, you know, like in a, if you're a movie star, and everybody applauds you, and they, you know, and how does that feel? Well, I'll tell you something how it feels, because I've been a star. You don't feel anything. So people give you all these accolades, and they say, oh, Armand, you're really wonderful, you're really fantastic, you're really something. It doesn't touch me very much, because I know what people are seeing is the performing me, and this is a performing me. Me doing the radio now is a performing me. You know, you don't have the real me on the radio. You know, maybe close. But it's not the real me. I'm here to entertain. I'm here to engage you. I'm here to teach. These are all these different things that I do. And the real me is just much softer, mushier, and doesn't want to work so hard. So I think when we see people and we admire them, and you wonder how, you know, why does somebody become a movie star when they have to hide in restaurants and they run away from the press and they run away, they almost hate the public? Because all of that feeling that they get, they don't feel. The alter self feels it. The alter self gets it. See? And you, little you sitting inside there somewhere, well, you're not getting this. You don't get the love from it. You get a good review. You may feel good for a few minutes. But basically, you still got the same self that you came in with. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. A good friend of mine said just today, when I get scared, I get blind. Do you know what that means?
Sure I do, yes. I think that scared you, that frightened you, is that part of you that will oftentimes shut down. And again, it's that rule of, you know, eat or not be eaten. It's when someone gets frightened, I know that I can speak for myself. When I become frightened or scared, my thinking stops, my feeling stops. I think I feel paralysis.
And then another person takes over.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? I mean, it's not like I become another person. It's like I step aside. I remember a person, one of the multiple personality people I was working with, who described it as a revolving door. She said it's a revolving door, and each character is in one of those sections of the revolving door according to what's needed. So when we get scared or frightened, boom, out comes and pops the tough guy. Or it could be any number of guys. We could take any number of different ways of being. Think about some of the ways that people feel or behave when they get scared. Did you ever see anybody become a perfectionist when they get scared? Sure, you could tell. Whenever you see a perfectionist, you're downright looking at terror. They are so afraid that there is an imperfection, and the imperfection is in them, and that you'll perceive it if you look hard enough, that they go around correcting everything because they're looking for the... But who is it that's doing it? The perfectionist is not a real self. It's an alter self. If you run into somebody who's a perfectionist, you usually run into somebody who's very angry and correcting and judging everything. How real is that person? Nowhere. You can't find their heart. They're just there, you know, doing the corrective, angry thing. It's like it's their wind-up doll. But second to that can also be the person who is this compulsive giver who serves. Now, they're serving all the time, and they look real to you because they're soft and so on and so forth, but they're passive-aggressive. They generally don't let you know when they get angry. They're there, and they're listening to you, and every now and then you're talking to them, and they just ignore you because they get filled with it. But they are not real. The server is not real. Even the deep romantic. That deep romantic, the person who believes that they are so real, all I want is what's real. You know, all I want is what I could feel. And they're living in torment all the time, pain all the time. That's not real. That's another position that people take. I will bring the grief upon myself. And therefore, I will protect myself that way, my longing, my yearning. Another one is the person who's always, you know, hiding away. These are all positions of personalities that are not you, but an alternate you that you developed. The person who controls everything, or the one who controls nothing. You know, or the person who's just out there and says life is a party and we just don't control anything. Or the one who stays asleep, you know, who makes believe that nothing is happening everywhere, and that, you know, wherever there is a disturbance, your job is just to quiet it down. These are all alternate selves that we adapt. And as we adapt these alternate selves, as we pick them up, they become part of our family, part of who we are. So one of the things I proposed yesterday is, if you think about somebody you love, how many alternate selves can you see in them? By the way, our telephone number is 212-209-2900. We will be taking your call shortly. How many alternate selves do you see in the person you care about the most? So let's start with your child, right? If you happen to have any children, think about your son. How many alternate selves does your son have? You say, well, I know my son. I know the real him. I'm not sure you do. Because the real him is the him you don't see, because he doesn't want to show it to you, because you're his mother. You're his father. He hides that part of him. You see a different part. You see the son him, the him who's a son. You know, or you think about your child, or you think about your mate, or think about your parents. Let's go there. Think about your mother. Do you know your real mom? I have no idea. Most of you, if I ask you, do you know your real mothers? Do you know if you thought about it? You'd say, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I know who my mother is. I don't know what she's really like underneath everything. Now, people very often equate misery with reality. You know, is your mom unhappy, the real her? Or is that just another personality that's being put on to get you to take care of her in some way, or to get pity from the world? What's your real parent like? What's your real parent like? What's your real father like? What a question! Well, I believe if we learn to look and see and not judge, but are willing to accept all the different parts of the people around us, not only the different parts, but the different personalities that they represent, and we don't expect them to always be real. If we go that way, then we see many more parts, and then we could love the total them, or the whole group of them. It might be 5 or 6 different ones. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. So, basically, there are two parts of us that are functioning. One that is always out there taking care of things, and the other part of us that is frightened. Am I in danger? Is a question we basically ask. So the first thing we do to protect ourselves is we hide our vulnerability. One personality is going to hide our vulnerability, hide our weakness, hide our insecurities. And that's what I think people do with each other. They kind of hide what they really feel. Just to let you know, there's some recent research. We'll take your calls in just a minute. We have to line them up. They've talked about, I made mention of yesterday, a recent article in the New York Times, as an older generation falls prey to eating disorders, that there becomes an obsession with staying alive as you get older. And this manifests in eating disorders that are like suddenly coming about. And what they talk about, here's Cynthia Bulk, director of the Eating Disorders Program at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, said that most of the patients with eating disorders are now adults. We're hearing from women, no matter how old they are, that they still have to achieve the societal ideal of illness and perfection. But as they get to their 50s and 60s and 70s, they become more and more obsessed with this image of well-being, to the point where there's laxative abuse, excessive exercise, binge eating, restricted eating, and it's usually very stressful on the person. So the person who is doing this generally has more and more alter selves trying to take over and saying, stay alive, and this is the way to do it. I'm going to ask you that same question. Do you know who your mother really is? Do you ever think about it? There's one other bit of information that I found very validating, which has to do with your stomach. And this is next time you think your gut is telling you something, the chance is that it really is. Scientists have discovered that crosstalk from the stomach to the brain, which will influence how you develop. The chatter from your gut will influence your personality, your learning capacity, and, well, your memory. Bacteria in the small intestine seem magnified 200 times as a key to how we feel. And the researchers also said it could play a role in the development of psychiatric illness and other health problems as well. While it does establish an important link, the study will be old news to those who go by their gut instinct of what their feelings tell them. And what this basically says is that there's a self that's anchored in the gut that makes decisions. And this gut instinct decision is a seat of an alter self. Not the person you know, but somebody else who's making decisions. So, trust your gut? No, I don't think you should trust your gut, because your gut is reactive. You know, your gut is often reacting. If you're somebody who's looking to get a job and you have trouble holding a job, one of the things that happen as you go for a job is you're going to get frightened. If you trust your gut, you're going to go to the movies instead. But listen to it one way or another. Establish a communication with it one way or another. So the research was carried out by a team at McMaster University in Ontario, and they found that there were germ-free creatures, had genes in the hippocampus, and it was like they take home messages is that the take home message is that the gut bacteria influence anxiety like behavior. And yesterday I also reported to you about people who take antidepressants. And who take antidepressants, that part of what happens is a whole other personality emerges besides the antidepressants, you know. So in other words, you become, you're depressed, then you take these antidepressants and that changes your chemistry on the inside, but now you're a different person, not the same person less depressed. You're a different person. Now, what does this mean? This means if you're in love with somebody, husband, wife, and they take these drugs, you're going to lose them, in a way. You're going to get a different self. Now, that different self may have enough available of the original self that you find it lovable and okay. But what usually happens when somebody takes antidepressants is they feel less of the bonding hormones, oxytocin. Now, what happens when you love somebody and then you take an antidepressant medication and you feel less of the bonding hormone? You don't feel as connected. So one of the ways that it looks originally is, I only love you when you're depressed. Well, it's partially true, you know. When you're depressed, you have more of that bonding, loving hormone, you know, and you therefore you want to hug me and hold on to me and so on and so forth. As you're getting undepressed, you don't have the bonding hormone as much, and you're not looking to be as affectionate with me. In fact, people who take antidepressants talk about losing their sex drive frequently. And what that means is their impulse to have that kind of intimate contact. This happens, and you wonder to yourself, how does this happen, you know? Another case where this happens is with pregnancy. With pregnancy, well, Linda, you know about this. When you're pregnant, is there an alter self very present?
Oh, most definitely, yes. You're very protective of the state that you're in. There's a sense of needing to take care, and there's a sense of like an insulation, a feeling of warmth, which keeps you a little bit distant from those around you. So you're less likely, you have fun with people, but you tend to be less intimate. Of course, sexually, you tend to be much more protective of the unborn baby inside of you, and motherly. So you have a sense of maternal feeling rather than a sexual feeling.
Is it a maternal feeling that gets turned on the outside to other people, or do you just feel it?
It could. It could. I know that it does. It depends upon the other people. But yes, very oftentimes other men would say, I find pregnant women very attractive, even erotic. But again, it could be, you know, that woman too may differ in that. You know, I can only speak for myself and those that I've known. But yes, definitely there's all different kinds of alternate senses of people when you become pregnant.
So hormone changes inside of you will make you feel very different. In fact, it goes so far as the hormone changes get you to have a different pheromonal reaction. Your smells become different. I'm sure you know about that.
Yes.
You know, as a woman who, when you're pregnant, smells dominate.
Yes.
They tell you who to be. They tell you what to come out. And there are things that you once liked that you no longer like. And there are things that you love that you would have never loved in the first place. So if we have this ability to change our character, and if you have this ability to change your character when you're pregnant, or when you're taking hormones, or when you're taking medication of any kind. What about when people take steroids? That's a whole other person. A steroidal human is not like a regular human. When you look at these bodybuilders who have taken a lot of steroids, and they stand up there and they flex their muscles, and you look at them and you say, ah, there's my son. No, your son's not in there. This is this image. This is this thing. This is this other person. And on steroids, that other person is absolutely amazing. On steroids, that person is a totally other self. We're going to take a short break. When we get back from our break, we're going to be taking your phone calls, my friend, at 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you in just a few seconds.
Like many of you, like many Americans, I have felt frustrated and betrayed by the state of the mainstream media in this country, a media whose priorities seem out of step with their responsibilities. We need a media that strengthens democracy, not a media that strengthens the government. We need a media that enriches public discourse, not one that enriches corporations.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
And this is Armand DeMille back with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We're talking about altered personalities, and our phones are hot. There are people waiting, standing by to talk, so let's address this. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there.
Yes, hello, Armand. How are you?
Hi, thanks for waiting.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. I'm calling. I found it very interesting in the beginning. You were mentioning about how somebody is in another self when they're, you know, giving of themselves. And I'm having that situation with my mother, who's 71, and she's her whole entire life has done nothing but give and give and give to other people. And now she's in a very bad state of mind, and she is, you know, seeking help for it. And I'm just looking, I wanted you to see if you could comment a little bit more on that. I found that very interesting. And to maybe see if you could give me some kind of a tip or something that I could do to work with my mother through this hard time.
Well, what do you see about your mother that's different during this time?
Well, she's very depressed, crying a lot. But just, you know, she doesn't even want to at this point. She doesn't even want to do anything for anybody. You know, she has that kind of an attitude now where she doesn't want to do anything anymore to help anybody, and she doesn't even want to really help herself.
Wow, that must be difficult for you. What does that do to you?
Oh, God, it is very difficult for me because, you know, it's like you kind of the roles kind of reverse because now, you know, I want to take care of her and get her out of, you know, pain and discomfort, kind of sort of similar to what she was doing for me when I was a young child. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand. So now you are suddenly unseeing a part of yourself that is a caretaker and also a caretaker that feels powerless.
Mm-hmm.
See, now this is very important because you're not very comfortable with being powerless, are you?
No.
You usually go through life and you take care of things, don't you?
I do. I take care of everything.
You take care of everything, and your mom is giving you a gift. She's saying to you, okay, kitty, get comfortable with the fact that here's one thing you can't take care of. Now, what's your name, by the way?
My name is Shelley.
Shelley, so now, Shelley, listen to this. Now, nature or your mom or whatever the big design is saying to you, Shelley, you got to let go.
Mm-hmm.
You got to let go with having to fix it. And
okay.
Instead of having to fix it, find another way to be there. Find another way to be there instead of fixing it.
Right.
Instead of making it better, find another way to be there. Now, that will change the energy in the entire place, because part of what your mother goes through, when somebody's depressed and they realize that everybody around them wants to get undepressed, wants to get them undepressed, they dig in deeper.
Mm-hmm.
They dig in deeper. They just, oh, you're not going to get me, and they just go in deeper and deeper.
That's right.
And one of the things you could do, as a loving daughter who really wants to maybe be with your mom in a way, is let her know that you're with her any way she is.
Right.
And I mean any way she is. That means you got to be comfortable with her in her depression, because very often depression has a kind of a swing to it. Mm-hmm. You go down through the bottom and eventually you come up, but there's nothing better than having a good friend, somebody who stands by you and says, I'm with you all the way, even any way you are.
Right, and it's interesting. I really like the point about the fact that, see, I really do, you know, what you said, you know, ask, you know, do you, when you're asked that question, do you really know who your mother is? I've spent a lot of time with my mother, and outside of her being my mother, I really do know how she functions as a person and what her, you know, what makes up her, you know, her makeup of who she is, you know?
Well, you don't know, because even now, as you're saying it, you don't know who she is now.
No, I don't.
Right, that's it. So this may be a self underneath there that's being unmasked, or it may be a reactive self. Did she lose somebody in her life recently?
She's lost. That's really what has come. There's been a lot of losses, yes.
And what loss did she suffer recently?
A very, very close dear friend, and also the loss of basically several losses within a very short time frame.
And what about this dear friend? What did this dear friend do for her that nobody else did?
I think the dear friend was maybe like an image of her father, which she also lost very early in life at around age 27. So I think that she's going, it's picking up the past of her grieving of her father's loss.
Well, that's very perceptive of you, because that does happen. Very often when we lose something that's very traumatic to us and we feel this heavy loss, what we do is we replace that person with somebody else.
Right.
And when we lose the person who we used, who was the replacement, we go back to the original grief.
That's right.
So let's say your mom is going through the grief of having lost her father, maybe for the first time.
Uh-huh.
Maybe she's going through it for the first time. She doesn't have to know this information. You don't have to tell her about it.
Right.
You know, but if you're there, imagine you're just being with somebody who just lost her dad.
Right.
And you're going to stand by her through the whole way and deal in some way with your own powerlessness, your own need to fix everything.
Right.
And Shelley, thank you for calling in.
And thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Bye-bye now.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi.
Yes, you're there.
Yes, I'm here.
I know.
Hello?
Hi there. Yes, speak up. You're on the air.
Yes. I find you very perceptive and...
Could you turn your radio off all the way?
Sure.
Okay. Sometimes people leave their radios on very little.
Yes, I find you very perceptive, very educated, and very impressive. I wonder what your take is on the issue of morality.
Very interesting question. Well, go ahead. Take it a little further with me. What about morality?
Okay. Is morality a societal, subjective interpretation of good and evil, for example, according to which society you happen to be a member of? Or is it just altogether a man-made thing and it's all a matter of interpretation?
Now, is it morality? When you talk about morality, are you talking about morality around issues related to sex by chance, since I'm one of these very perceptive guys?
Well, it could be any subject, and that is a subject, and why not?
Okay, so in that issue, what is a conflict that you would imagine that would be a moral conflict that one would have to deal with, that you might even have to deal with in your own mind?
Very good. I see how you put it back in my lap.
Good. You're very smart as well.
Thank you. What you had just talked about losing someone important, and then you replace that with someone else, and then when that replacement is gone, you're back to the original grief that you should be working through. That more or less is something that I am doing right now.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear it. You lost somebody very close to you a while back.
Yes. And hindsight is 20/20. And it's just an issue of I keep getting, like, taking an onion and taking a one layer at a time off and getting deeper and deeper into what I hope to be the essence of a matter.
Sure. And you know, I don't know if that's exactly going to take place that way. I do know that there is a grief that you go through. I don't know if that the part of us that needs to go through this grief, I don't know if it ever gets finished. I don't know if it ever ends. Because
I think it can. I lost a spouse 5 years ago, and I did a very intensive study on the process of grief. And I was fortunate enough, I had the means to take 14 months off and lock myself away and go through that grieving process. And I believe that if you do not do that, that if you suppress or repress or deny the feelings that emanate from a grief, that's going to manifest in disease.
Or it's going to manifest in some alternate to your personality, but it doesn't necessarily have to be disease. It could be in achievement, or it could manifest in choosing other partners. You know what I mean?
Yes, you're not as objective-minded about things. And it's interesting how you refer to the subject of alternate personalities as being not real. I equate those aspects of personality perhaps in terms of reincarnation.
Okay.
Do you understand reincarnation?
Yes, I do, but you know, I could also understand. Sure, sure. Of course. Makes as much sense as all the other stuff.
That past lives have influence on us.
Might very well be, for all we know.
And one final word. I know this is your show, and I'll let you go. You'll let me go.
What's your name? What's your
my
name?
My name is Michael.
Michael, you're a wonderful guest to have on air, and I really appreciate your calling.
Thank
so
you.
Go ahead. Tell me, what's your other thing?
Okay, 10 years ago, 2 weeks ago, it was a 10-year anniversary, I had a near-fatal car accident. I was a pedestrian crossing the street, and a car driven by a man on a cell phone, he creamed me. He ran me over, and I wound up in a hospital, and I was unconscious for a month. And the doctors told my friends and family the chances of my surviving were 1,000 to 1. And here I am 10 years later speaking to you. I'm working. I'm fully employed. And I made a comeback. And I'll tell you this, that from that experience, I learned that you have to make big problems into little problems and make little problems non-existent. That if I could overcome that traumatic experience, everything remaining in my life is a piece of cake. And I'll just leave you with that.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, Armand. Hello.
Hello.
Okay. I had to stop listening because I called after Linda mentioned how she felt during pregnancy, and I had something to say to that.
Let me hear about that.
Okay.
What's your name?
Oh, my name is Evelyn.
Evelyn, yes. What is it?
And I want to say that every time I was pregnant, I just had this feeling of everything is grand. Everything is grand, no matter what happened. I just knew there would be a good outcome each time. And I think it made me more available to people, you know, not to be, because I was shy, not to be afraid of speaking to people, not necessarily telling my views, but approaching them or, you know, listening to them if they should approach me.
So let's say it's possible that the hormones related to your becoming pregnant and the self that developed, like Linda said, this protective self comes out.
I didn't have a protective self. That's the part I was very questionable about.
What do you mean? But if you were out there, if you were out there much more able to take care of being in the world, that's what I mean by a protective self. You know, you're safer in the world.
No one is safe in the world. Not anyone who isn't insane. There is danger everywhere. You just have to accept it as part of your life.
So part of you found it more acceptable.
Yes.
And to be out there in the world and then at another time.
Well, at a time previously when I was younger, yes.
And when you were not pregnant.
Because it stayed, you see, the thing is this, that although I had this, a clearer vision of everything, and it's okay, you simply live through it. It stayed with me. It didn't go, I didn't become anyone else. I became me.
Became you a little safer in the world, Evelyn?
Safer is a funny word.
I know it's a funny word for you.
All right,
because
we're
I'll
on
tell
the
you,
same page then.
I'll tell you why I know it's a funny word for you, because I hear in you a person who never feels safe, who has never felt safe, right through from childhood to your adulthood. I hear the part of you that says, you know, you have to be careful one way or another. I hear the part of you that believes, that lives a life of caution. I hear that. I understand that. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, because you'll say you have to be that way.
Yes,
and I'll say, no, some people have to be that way, and other people don't.
Yes, but caution only means that you recognize that you can't really trample on other people's feelings. You know, you have to, they're people, and they get hurt, and you know what I'm telling you? Because many people say things and do things that hurt people, but they don't mean it. But it does anyhow. So that caution brings up the idea of a frightened person, and that's not true. You have manners.
Evelyn, let's go a step further than this. When you were little, was anybody considerate of your feelings?
Well,
did anybody really care about what you felt? Sounds to me like they really didn't.
Well, it was a different way of growing up children. After all, I'm 80 years old.
Yeah.
were the parents and there were the children, but I think they were careful. Yeah, I mean, I remember being quite happy, even under bad circumstances, because, of course, at my age, I also lived through bad economic times. That is, my parents did. And I guess I did with them.
Evelyn, thank you so much for calling in.
Okay. Lovely listening to you. I like this idea of an alter you.
Yep.
It's
alter
great.
Self.
It really is. Bye.
Thank you very much. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
I'm good.
I know you're at the end of the show, so I'll make this quick. Just a quick statement. You had a guest on a number of years ago who said he wouldn't treat somebody if they were on any kind of medication like SSRI drugs. And, you know, I have to agree with that, because being a person that has been on SSRI drugs on and off for years, it really is true that it changes you. You're not really the same person that you are on it, then off it. And generally, as the saying goes, the going up is certainly not worth the coming down, because I'm just coming off of, you know, rather long stint of SSRI medication. And
which
it's
one?
Not a fun thing. Pristiq.
You know, it's a funny thing about each one of... What's your name, by the way?
Roland.
Roland. It's a funny thing, Roland. You know, in each one of these, there's an Effexor personality, there's a Prozac personality. Do you know that each one presents a self that if I had a party... And if I had a group of people, if I had people grouping in the room and they were all on SSRIs, I am sure the Prozacs would get together with the Prozacs, and the Effexors would get together with the Effexors, and the Paxils would get together with the Paxils.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a commonality. The reason that these SSRIs are usually prescribed, why does somebody prescribe Paxil as opposed to that, is because of the personality, what they want to treat, what they want to bring up. So each one is so succinct in the way that it works on you, if they work at all. And therefore, the person that yields out of that, the person that comes out of that, is kind of predictable. Now, here's the problem, like you're saying. UK, that self is a little better off than the guy who was dragging himself in the mud. But you could feel the organ itself. You could feel the change. It's like when you take antibiotics, you know, you could feel how different you are. When you take steroids, you could feel that difference. Now, years ago, when that man said to me, I wouldn't treat anybody who is on SSRIs, I am sure that that person no longer is saying that, because the requirement of practically every medical insurance is that if the person has to, they're depressed, they have to go get SSRIs, and most people are taking them nowadays. However, when a therapist treats someone who's on an SSRI, the therapist should help that person distinguish between what their alter personality based on the drug is, and not say to them, here's the real you coming through. But they show them here, yeah, this is part of your alter personality. So you tell me, Roland, one of the things about you that you've noticed since you've been taking these antidepressants that you believe is not really you, but you're living it. What would you say about that?
It's a kind of numbness.
Yeah.
It's, also...
Is it like a not caring kind of numbness?
Yes, absolutely. It's a not caring. I would suggest that anybody who's considering this, you know, considering this route, you know, educate yourself as much as possible, because truly coming off of these medications, once you decide that you may not need it anymore, or your situation has changed so that you're thinking that, you know, you're back on level ground again, it really is a very unpleasant prospect coming off of this medication. I mean, I was coming off of it, and I couldn't understand why I was so agitated and at times enraged. And then I realized it's because of the medication was tapering off.
And what the medication was doing was suppressing certain personalities. You see, here we go to the concept of the altered personalities. One of the things we're going to suppress is we're going to suppress the angry personality. So you suppress that long enough, and then you take away the mask, you take away the shield, and it comes up. You could just try stopping smoking and get the very same reaction. If you watch people who are smoking cigarettes, you know, usually, and then they stop smoking, you watch this unmasked, aggressive self come out. You almost can't understand who they are. You wonder where it comes from, or they wind up devouring everything and eating food like crazy and blowing up and getting very fat, because it is all like there's a piece being controlled by the chemicals. In this case, nicotine is controlling the devouring self, and nicotine is controlling the angry self, or alcohol could do it. Well, when you start, I think you're right, Roland. I think when a person goes on SSRIs, or if you have and love somebody who's going to take these medications, learn about it.
Oh, yeah.
And learn about, and learn to expect that these changes are going to take place. And learn to be like Shelley, you know, who called in a little earlier. Learn to be able to be there with the person while they go through it. But remember, the hope is that you will eventually get off these things.
Fortunately for me, I have a very loving partner who understands that the monster that comes out every so often, and it is pretty monstrous, is not really me. It's something that's chemically induced, and I have to remind myself on sometimes a minute-by-minute basis that the feelings that I feel now, you know, trying to get back to normal, is chemically induced, and it's not, you know, something that has changed in me that's caused me to feel that way. It's, you know, it's not the true me.
You know, it's really, really beautiful that you say it, Roland. It's one of these things where he's one of these questions where everybody's always asking who I am, and I say that the eventual question you ask is, who was that guy? You know what I mean? So when Roland comes out with his creepy self, right, and the creepy self dominates and takes over, and winds up smacking a few things around and making some kind of a mess out of things, you look back, and, you know, as you look back on his functioning, you go, who was that guy? Now, you're really lucky. Because if you find somebody who loves you, and they love you in all your parts, and when they love all the parts of your personality and they see them, and they don't demand that, you know, you hide your parts, but that you can be all of them, and they love you for all the parts that you are, you're very, very lucky. So, Roland, whatever you've done in life to deserve getting that kind of love, I'm real happy for you.
Oh, I think I deserve it 100%.
Good for you. Good for you. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, Armand, take care. Bye.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. We're going to have to be going. I will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. You can go to WBAI.org, and you could get a copy of you could listen to today's program or yesterday's program in case you missed it. Be back with you next Tuesday. Hey, go to the website, thepositivemind.com, and send me an email.
Listeners of WBAI, you're invited to a special event.